just starting your day, or did you just get off?
They call it go, you know.
So what is it you do?
I'm a driver.
Oh, like a chauffeur. Anyone I'd know?
I hope not.
What is your name?
Baby.
And we're recording.
All right.
And I'm going to be, I think it's appropriate that
yeah.
I be driving.
There you go. Thematically appropriate.
So,
reaction video. This is a little bit, I suspect this one will be a little bit less immediate than the Spider-Man and Transformers ones, mostly
yeah.
because this movie's been out for like 2 weeks, and there's baggage in terms of reviews and everything that
yeah.
we didn't have with those others. So yeah, we just got out of Baby Driver.
Yep.
Hence all the driving and.
And we're in an underground parking garage, which I have to really, really fight hard not to have fun driving.
Yeah. Or to just steal any one of the, because apparently I didn't like quite catch until about halfway through the movie that apparently every car in that garage was like property of Kevin Spacey that you just can take when you need to get rid of it.
Yeah.
What's funny about that is, that was one of the things that I'm like, just for verisimilitude, guys. And first of all, I really enjoyed the movie.
Yes.
I don't think it's quite the, like, the best Edgar Wright movie thing that I've been hearing.
Yeah.
But it's definitely a very solid movie, and it's probably the most, like, crowd-pleasing thing that Edgar Wright's done outside of maybe Shaun of the Dead.
As we become very white, because everything gets translated. Okay, suddenly. I guess for a while, we're probably going to have
problem
thing. I mean, I will say, like, my mom absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
Like, I went to see it with my family because it was, like, we were out on vacation, and, like, everyone from my 16-year-old sister to my mother, and there's the police, loved it. So that's probably the first one. I mean,
yeah.
maybe Shaun of the Dead would have been one, which, weirdly, my mom hasn't seen yet, even
yeah,
though she's a huge
saying, yeah.
Zombie film fan. But, yeah, no, I loved it. It certainly wasn't as much of the film, I will say, as
yeah.
I thought it would be. Like, the trailer is ridiculous. Like, the trailer's awesome,
yeah.
but it's a trailer, and it's specifically edited to a song.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I will say it's definitely, it's interesting, because I think that the role the music plays in the movie, you're going to get a lot of people who review this with essentially, like, oh, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, I mean, the mom's tape thing and everything.
Well, there's that, yeah. The thing I was going to say, though, is that Edgar Wright's been doing this for a while now. Like,
yeah.
again, going back to Shaun of the Dead and
the
Queen again.
Yeah, yeah.
Lots of Queen.
Yeah. well, it's good to add it to, I can tell you.
That's, yeah, it's true. And that's probably the most, I mean, I'm sure that's part of the choices made for the Guardians
yeah.
of the Galaxy movies, too. Is what but, yeah, I think that if there's one, like, weird nitpicky thing that actually, like, consistently bugged me throughout the movie,
mm-hmm.
it's that every place they go, they just drop the car and leave it with the door open, because
yeah.
it's like the extra second and a half
it takes to close
the door
yeah.
is not
worth the translatable the police being able to go, hey, wait, somebody just left their door open?
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Weird.
And that's the thing of, like, for me, I'm like, if you close the door,
yeah.
like, there's a couple of cars in this movie where it's like, doesn't matter what you do, it's going to get spotted.
Yeah, yeah,
like, there's a purple sedan that he steals at one point
yeah.
in the movie, and when he abandons that, you're like, well, it's purple.
It's a gigantic
yeah.
purple, what do they
like
say, Buick, I think it was, or Lincoln, I forget which one it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, I can't remember. It's like an
yeah.
80s,
yeah.
you know. And again, like, there's a couple of cars that play heavily in this movie that are, like, very 80s.
Yeah.
And part of that probably is because
they're cheap to destroy.
Well, there's that, too. I was going to say, creatively, we talked a little bit before you started
yeah.
rolling cameras about how this feels like an update of the 1980s, like, action comedy kind
oh,
of,
yeah.
like, the True Lies kind of thing. Certainly the character, like, the archetype of Baby,
mm-hmm.
If you strip away kind of his personality quirks,
yeah,
like he's got, like, essentially a cargo vest that's full of replacement parts for all of his baby things. So, like, he's got you know, he always wears this vest, and he always wears sunglasses, and he always has his iPad in it, or iPod and earbuds.
Yeah, yeah, like, he has, like, three or four for different moods and stuff like that, which is, you know.
And then, clearly, like, some of them he must have bought secondhand or something, because you get, like, a pink bedazzled one that's like, a thing they use in one of the scenes.
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure that the film is essentially modern day, because other people have, like, normal phones.
Yeah.
So, since, you know, there's no reason not to have them be secondhand, because it'd be really stupid to buy a anyone who buys an iPad, or actually they don't even make the actual
iPod Touches. It's basically an iPhone,
they wouldn't be his deal.
No, because it would need, typically they are less storage and more junk, and what he wants is essentially, like, I have still one of those big bricks that Callie used to own, that's like a 256 gigabyte, like, iPod that all it does is play music, and that's it. And that's pretty much, I think, what Baby probably has, because he wants to have the entirety of the Western musical canon on his.
Which, weirdly, though, I mean, the one, weirdly, though, he seemingly doesn't have, and this could be spoilers, so I don't know, he doesn't have, shoot, I should have taken that exit. oh, well. We'll lose the cops that way. But weirdly, doesn't have his mother's music digitized.
Which is one thing.
Which I get is the tape, and there's a whole thing. But, so it's probably less the music and more the, you know.
And I think it's interesting because that is a thing. Like, within the context of the movie, he has a whole, like, tabletop setup to edit his own, like, music.
Yeah,
DJ
all these
style. But he still uses, like, cassette tape to record and, like, to capture those. it's interesting. I would assume at some point, I mean, certainly if he hasn't got it digitized by the end of this movie, then he should.
Yeah.
But if I had to guess, I would guess that, like, well, I won't go into the spoiler. One thing that I thought was really interesting was Kevin Spacey. It's funny because they blow a big reveal in a way in the trailers, because in the trailers, like, I don't know about you, there was one character who I very specifically thought, like, that's the bad guy in the movie, and that person didn't really, like, turn on him.
Yeah.
Until about, I don't know, an hour and 40 minutes into a 2 hour and 15 minute movie.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting to me. It's difficult to discuss that without spoilers.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of things. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think you could probably tell all the spoilers and you'd still be like, that's enjoyable.
Yeah, it's more about execution than anything else.
Although I will say, not to sidetrack, the car chase sequences, fucking unbelievable. You know, I mean, on the level of, like, Transporter and, you know, I mean, very much, like, but the editing itself was weirdly, I would say, not as good as his other films. Like, it makes me think of which I always end up referencing this, the Every Frame of the Painting series. They did a really great piece
on Edgar Wright's
comedy and about comparing it to films like, you know, like, I don't think Step Brothers in particular, but, you know, those kind of crappy comedies.
I actually think that was one of them.
It was with Will Ferrell college movie.
Old School.
Old School. But that he, in particular, is able to edit. And there was touches of that, but, like, a lot of the other, like, the basic heart of the film was very basic editing. It wasn't bad.
Right.
It just was very basic, which is, like, you watch Shaun of the Dead, you watch Hot Fuzz, almost even more so in End of the World.
End of the World?
World's End. That almost every shot is like a distinct choice, not like he very rarely ever would do a, over-the-shoulder conversation.
Yeah.
A lot of the film is that. I
will say it felt very un-Edgar Wright in a lot of ways, which is probably why I thought that, like, as much as I enjoyed it, it's not my favorite Edgar Wright movie, because I like the way he directs.
But it's curious, I mean, like, one thing I was wondering, like, what would this film be like if he had is actors. Because, I mean, that's one of the problems is like,
and I actually
it's
really
kind of
like the cast.
Wait for the Christopher Nolan film like 5 years from now that doesn't have any of his
regular crew.
His Batman Returns crew.
I feel like Edgar Wright may have slipped into the, and maybe Baby Driver, because it's been a big financial success, we'll kind of reverse this, but I feel like Edgar Wright has fallen into the Kevin Smith thing, yeah, where his movies were all making roughly the same amount of money, and it was not a huge amount.
Yeah.
But he made a lot of people famous. Yeah. And so all of a sudden, like, you can't get your own actors for your movie because, like,
once
Simon
in Star
Pegg
Trek
costs.
And once
yeah,
in,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have no real clue whether whether he approached these people and they said no.
I mean, I don't see it would be a very different film. I think it'd be just as much of a fun film.
Yeah.
But it'd be a very different film if he had, you know, those guys in
troop.
It. His troop in it.
I also think it would also be
a very British film.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Not an American film.
This is a very American film, just in terms of, like, they very much used, like, Atlanta in this movie isn't just the setting for the movie. Like, it very much is the film.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's also, like, they certainly, it's not just, like, you know, Vancouver.
Yeah.
It's another excellent Every Frame Is a Movie. It's very much, you see, if you know Atlanta, and I've been down there, fortunately or unfortunately, a couple times in the last couple of years. And there's shot, I'm like, I was there. Well, holy crap, I did an interview right there. And so it's, you know, I'm curious on whether it was whether it's just the generic, Atlanta itself is a very generic city.
Yeah, I think that there's a combination of things, like, because Atlanta is not only kind of, it's a good kind of fill in the blank city, but also it's like the Georgia tax incentives are huge. So probably it's one of those things where it wouldn't surprise me at all if it was one of those things where Edgar Wright had the script and then built.
Well, I will say it's a very generic city, but I mean, one thing that it does very well, having driven around it, just actually, I mean, is that you have all the different things that you need for a good car chase without the New York City, like, there's traffic. I mean, look, at Atlanta traffic is fucking terrible all the time, but that's literally only, like, you get on the highway, you go on the side roads, you go into, you know, the historic districts, there's no fucking traffic and huge roads, things that New York City and obviously budget, and like, obviously 100%, I mean, there's no doubt.
I will say, I really liked the one time there was a traffic thing, and I liked the fact that, and it worked on a couple of levels. First of all, the fact that we got to see a lot of kind of action shots, and we got introduced to the various different groups of characters. But also, I really liked the fact that we basically saw Baby do one of his drives where everything went right, and one where everything went wrong, and they still managed to survive.
Yeah.
Before you get into what is essentially the main heist at the heart of the movie.
Yeah.
And I also thought the second heist, which was ostensibly, you know, as you see in the trailer, he wants to do the one final job and be done with his life of crime. The one final job was the one that went horribly wrong, and you can really get a sense for kind of why Baby doesn't fit with Kevin Spacey's character. Because one of the interesting things about it is that there's one or two scenes where Kevin Spacey's character is, like, a fairly one-dimensional, like, organized crime guy.
Yeah.
But for most of the movie, his relationship with Baby is really interesting. It's fairly intimate. Certainly one of the things that I find interesting is, you know, he has this whole conceit where he doesn't work with the same crew twice. Baby is basically the only thing that stays consistent every single time. And so when he splits up the take, Baby owes him a huge amount of money. And so the take on each one of these jobs, he basically splits five ways for the four people who do the heist and Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
And then he takes his cut and Baby's cut and gives Baby, like, one of the 40 stacks of bills, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought it was a really interesting kind of dynamic that they built between those two characters. I thought funny enough, that relationship was probably my favorite one in the movie, even though, like, so much of the movie kind of puts heavy weight on Baby's relationship with Jonathan slash Deborah,
yeah.
the waitress at the...
Yeah, no, I mean, it's interesting because, I mean, he's, you know, find out pretty quickly he's orphaned. His parents died in a car crash, and that's why he has the hum and the drum. That the fact that he has, you know, basically two father figures to an extent in the film, Kevin Spacey, and then his foster dad. Who is he has a fun relationship with.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting, you know, how that plays out, because it's not just the guy with a gun against his head having to do the next next crime. It is, it's a little bit deeper than that. Or I'd say it's a lot deeper than that. Especially as the film kind of spoils out, because he also defends Baby against the other criminals who see him, question him,
like, whether or not he's a criminal. In the first two jobs, there's one guy in each job who can't keep his goddamn mouth shut about Baby and who doesn't like him and blah, 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 blah. The first guy goes away and doesn't come back.
Yeah.
And then the second guy comes back for the third job. Which, again, one of the things that doesn't really add up to me, but again, it works for the story, is the idea that, let's go to B&M.
Barnes & Noble?
Yeah.
Okay.
But one of the things that doesn't really add up for me is the fact that Kevin Spacey's character, and I can't remember Kevin Spacey's character name at all, but the fact that Kevin Spacey would have taken Bats back in. Because to me, like, Bats was, like, Jamie Foxx's character.
Yeah.
Like, he was the crazy one in the whole thing. And
he specifically, I mean, and it should be noted that, like, he specifically was playing that role.
Yeah.
Like, it's one thing that I enjoyed, that I enjoy a lot. I mean, of course, this is, you know... You could say that, so he did the zombie film, he did he did the cop film, and that this is the, you know, the all the tropes and everything like that. And then he's able to play with all those tropes that, you know, I mean, someone like my mother, who knows nothing about Edgar Wright, could walk into the film and enjoy it, because it's just, it's not just another film. It's not like, you know, it's not like some director who does a lot of things. Oh, it's his take on the... thing. This is an Edgar Wright film still with that. But sorry, continue.
No. One of the only things that really kind of perplexed me, and again, part of this just goes to, like, it's story necessity and blah, 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 but it did take me out of the movie a little bit, is the fact that Kevin Spacey's character is a smart guy, he's a compassionate guy, and he's a businessman, but he keeps making decisions throughout this movie that don't make any sense in terms of him as a businessman and as a smart guy. Like, he'll bring back, you know, he changes his crew every single time so he's harder to track and so that he doesn't have, like, law enforcement trouble. But then he brings back somebody like Bats, who's a clear liability in the first job, and then becomes an even bigger liability in the second job.
Yeah.
And then second and third, but first and second that Bats is in. And then in that third job, there's a beat where it appears as though Baby has compromised the job.
Yeah.
And at that point, like, there had already been so many complications, and it had gone so horribly wrong that Kevin Spacey called it off once and then put it back on.
Yeah.
And then Baby basically just stands up to him and tells him, no, we're doing it.
The thing is, though, with his character, and I think the way that they build it, since Spacey's character, and... I mean, just not spoilers, but, you know, whatever. It goes into the realm of that, I guess, but not actual spoilers. But Spacey's character is kind of like even though he's physically there, he's to an extent the voice over the phone.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to think. I was just watching some of Reservoir Dogs, and I'm trying to remember the name of the character. But he's the organizer, but he doesn't have any connection to these people. Literally, they all disappear at any given moment. And so I can see why, like, if everything goes wrong, he heads out of town.
Yeah.
And he also, you know, I mean, it's well established that he has cops on his payroll and everything like that, you know. So So I don't think he necessarily has anything. He has the fact that he won't be able to do the job again.
Right.
So if Baby, and you know, again, and he has the, there's, I think it's actually even said in the trailer or something like that, but you know, the fact that Baby is his lucky charm. Yeah, so yeah. I think he just kind of goes, ah, fuck it.
I think one of the interesting things is that his character also, and this speaks to, again, a kind of a version of kind of organized crime that we don't see very much anymore in film.
Yeah.
His character really doesn't seem to believe that it will go badly for him.
Yeah.
Like, the, you know, his whole pitch to Baby when Baby gets him paid off to come back and do one last job is, it's going to be great. You're going to be here. You're going to make all this extra money. Think about how much you've paid me over the years. Yeah. You're going to be a millionaire.
You can drive Lamborghinis.
Yeah. And there's no, at any point, no, like, consideration for the fact that, like, this is going to end and we're all going to be dead.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of blood in the third act, mm-hmm. but the way that it's treated in leading up to that, it's a very kind of again, to go with your analogy, it's kind of a pre-Tarantino way of looking at organized crime.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of, there's not very much in the way of stakes. Yeah. When somebody does die, it really deeply affects Baby, in spite of the fact that, you know, there's like three people who die in that first job.
Yeah.
Or the second job, excuse me. And clearly he's done at least a dozen jobs, and so you're sitting here going, there's no... I find it really hard to believe that the first 11 all go off without a hitch, and then the very last one before he retires goes that badly. So I'm kind of, it's interesting to see, like, he's very deeply affected, and I think there's plot reasons that he needs to be really deeply affected, because it helps to really drive the fact that he doesn't want to come back.
Well, I mean, one thing with it being the driver is that, you know, as the film goes on, the jobs change.
Yeah.
And that, you know, there's a, you know, basically an ATM heist.
Yeah.
And it's right there.
Yeah, that's true.
And then also, you know, there's other things going on in that realm.
Yeah.
It definitely it exists in a world where, you know, I mean, well, clearly, I mean, I'd say, you know, Kevin Spacey's character is so comfortable with the fact he has the police paid off. I mean, he is his own entity. And I don't think that there's really any chance that, you know, the worst case scenario. I mean, to the point where his kid, you know, his nephew knows that he's knows that he's a criminal, and it's not, you know, I mean, everybody's really open about talking about it.
And I think that they never really discuss it overtly, but there was a dialogue cue to me that he's probably a known gangster because when they go to scout one of the jobs, he sends Baby in. And he says something like, well, I can't be seen there, but you can.
Yeah.
And this is not a place, like, without spoiling it, but the place that they're sending him into scout, it's not a place where anybody would be particularly suspicious, except that clearly if you have a record and then they look back at the security camera.
Well, I mean, there is the point. I mean, also in the world where, you know, fingerprints don't seem to matter at all because no one wears gloves except until the end, which is weird.
I think it's... I mean, with Baby, you can kind of... It's okay. He's not in the system.
Well, I would imagine he's actually in the system.
Oh, I know. Because he's a foster care system.
Which is my only reason I actually even thought about that. I'm like, oh, he's not in the system. Oh, wait a minute. You know, as we always do with these things, you know, it's beyond nitpicking because there's not... At least, I mean, this film, there's not... You could literally walk away with this film. Yeah. I would actually be hard-pressed to write...
I think...
Write a 1,000-word... other than gushing about it, because it's like...
I really think that it's going to... like, and I liked it a lot. I didn't quite love it, but this is exactly how I felt coming out of Hot Fuzz the first time. Hot Fuzz got better and better for me as I watched it a couple of more times.
No, I mean, this is a film that if you get to... if you really like it the first time, and you can get an opportunity to see it a second time...
Yeah, Zach saw it twice. This is
my second time, and... you'll end up, I mean, maybe if you're like really, really paying attention, you'll be like, oh,
yeah,
crap.
Exactly.
You know,
there were a couple of little things that I spotted, but then you pointed out a bunch more.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. So first time you watch it, just enjoy it because it's like a really good you know, heist driving film, you know.
And it really, like, again, we like to nitpick things. Mm-hmm. So the first 15 minutes of this has been like kind of
it's always
like, oh, this didn't work and this didn't work. But yeah, I mean, it was a very, very good movie in terms of, like, and first of all, I will say every performance in here is great.
Oh, yeah.
Probably the performance I enjoyed the least was Jamie Foxx, but that's partially because that archetype. I mean, everybody's kind of an archetype. And
well,
then,
no, I mean that. I mean, that literally, people, everyone's playing. There's a Bonnie and Clyde. Then there's and then there's like all these different. Everyone is playing.
Yeah,
but specifically an archetype. But yes,
well, which is an Edgar Wright thing anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
He likes to do that. And then with Baby in particular, they pile a lot more kind of like mannerisms on top of the archetype to bury it a little bit.
Yeah,
but everybody else is very much out in the open with who they are, and then. I feel like the archetype that Jamie Foxx is playing is just the least interesting of the archetypes used in the film. And I think
it doesn't help that I just can't stand Jamie Foxx.
Yeah.
I'm more than okay with him in this film. But
this is a really random thing, but in a movie full of actors who by and large, like, it's mostly actors who've done primarily small things and who haven't gotten a ton of recognition outside of, you know, John Hamm got TV recognition but no feature film. But there's a scene where Jamie Foxx says something like, "That's an Oscar-winning performance right there!" And all I can think is, like, "Ha ha, and he has an Oscar." which I think Kevin Spacey's got to have one, right?
I imagine so.
I think he has, like, three. I know he has at least one because Conan O'Brien had, like, there was a sketch on one of the first episodes of Conan where they had a statue of Kevin Spacey made, and Kevin Spacey showed up with his Oscar to condemn it. Oh, and you know what it was? It was Spacey messed up, and he let an F-bomb drop on the air. And so they built a statue. And they started doing, it was like a running gimmick for the first season of Conan, that like, if you dropped an F-bomb on the show, they would build a really bad statue of you, and then bring you on to essentially curse out the statue. Anyway. There was every kind of piece of the movie that they brought in was really effectively used. Like, the driving stuff was really effectively used. It was really well done. Like you said, the editing was a little pedestrian for that kind of movie, but that kind of reinforced my
outside of the car, and I, again, caveat, outside of the car chase sequences, which are ridiculous, and also usually, you know, inside baseball stuff kinds of ruins a lot of action stuff, but if you go and find, there's a, you don't need to go and find something, I'll just say it, very extraordinarily little green screen was actually used. Everything was done, almost all this, or I think either everything or almost everything was done on the street that you see it happening on, and the drivers actually drove. Like, this is not Transformers, you know, this is not Spidey, this is, you know, the shit's actually happening, which I'm very glad I knew that going into it, because there's a couple sequences where there's an edit, but I've seen the one where they're about to slam into the garbage truck, and it looks like a completely impossible driving move.
Yeah,
I've seen the wide shot of the whole thing, and they actually do it.
Yeah.
So it's like, there's, you know, when you actually know that it's not an edit to hide the oh my God, they crashed into something or whatever, but it's everything is right on. It's up there with the first transporter when it comes in. I love my driving.
To me, like, the fact they did it on real streets and that it was identifiably like it had that like the Blues Brothers kind of feel to it. Although obviously the Blues Brothers didn't do stunt driving, it was really just like the gag was that they basically just went and,
well, I mean, it was, I mean, I would have to guess that it, I'll have to rewatch Bullet to remember, but I mean, obviously I would guess that that's really where a lot of the, not, or French Connection, I mean, there's, it can't just be Bullet, because there's a ton of films they could have referenced, and Edgar Wright being Edgar Wright is, could have referenced probably some esoteric shit that
and just so we've said it, I'm sure everybody else has said it, but speaking of references, the fact that Alden Ehrenreich, or whatever his name is that how I say it?
Who?
The main character.
Oh, the main character. I have no idea. You could ask my sister who...
I'm pretty sure that this kid is the same kid who's playing Han Solo, right?
I think so, yeah.
And
yeah.
He's got the vest, like his baby uniform, like yeah. His utility vest that has all of the like iPods and yeah, sunglasses yeah. And... Yeah. And that was one of my favorite, like, visual gags, is that he's just got an endless supply of sunglasses yeah. in there, because at one point he, like,
gets...
somebody borrows a pair, and then he puts another one on, and then that one gets slapped off his face, and as soon as the guy who slapped him turns again. His back, he just puts another one on.
It's a silence, yeah.
Yeah. I will say that there was something, and it's not sustainable over the course of a feature film, but there was something really charming about the bits where the long... stretch at the beginning where he basically said nothing.
Yeah.
It had a, like, Peter Sellers in Being There kind yeah. of thing to yeah. it, which, of course, is the kind of, like, it's exactly kind of what they were going for, because everybody else in the movie assumes that he's yeah. mentally deficient.
Yeah.
When really the reason he's quiet is mostly because his adoptive father is deaf, and yeah. he signs most of the time. And so he's used to not having to have yeah. constant background noise.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I will say, I mean, based on the fact that supposedly he's having to have acting performance issues in Han Solo, yeah, right? That's what I've heard.
And again...
And he's not, I mean, he's come out as, I guess he did something recently that yeah. he, like, got arrested. I don't remember.
I don't remember yeah. for sure if it's actually him.
But, this guy has gotten in trouble with something. I mean, yeah. he's a teen heartthrob actor. I forget what series he's from. It is a really great use of him, like mm-hmm. the fact that like he's able to, he doesn't have to talk. Yeah. I mean, I will say he does have a really good I don't know whether that's his voice. I've never actually heard him speak before, but his like the whatever accent that he puts on is really good.
It's basically a Georgia accent. It's like you see a lot of these in like Tennessee too, which is where I was for work.
Yeah,
where. The people who like the big urban areas where there's a lot of northerners, so it doesn't sound like the cartoonish like Texas southern accent. It's basically just enough of a lilt to give you like a charming kind of
yeah. He's putting. I mean, also it's you know, you can never tell, which is another kind of endearing mm-hmm. Trait that whether they gave him or it's acting or whatever mm-hmm. a combination of both is that you can never tell whether he's putting on a shtick, because that's a big part of it, is whether he's putting on his cool silent type suit because he's, you know, it was a Jamie Foxx's line, whether he's scared or whether he's, you know, too confident or something. Yeah, I forget what it was, but
it was something along the lines of you're either a stone cold badass or you're scared as hell.
Yeah.
Because, you know, somebody takes a swing at him and he doesn't blink.
Yeah. 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 So. But, I mean, I think we hit 30 minutes, otherwise we're going to keep going, which we probably can, but it's going to be the same.
I really dug it. You should definitely see it. It feels like the least Edgar Wright-y of all the Edgar Wright films. Oh, yeah, it feels like it's him. And sometimes you'll see a guy like Soderbergh, mm-hmm. where, like, he has a very distinctive, like, voice and palette and style.
Yeah.
But he decides, like, fuck it, I'm going to do Ocean's 11 because... Yeah. I can use my Soderbergh skills for box office gain.
No,
this kind of feels like that, where he... Like, it definitely still has enough Edgar Wright-isms in it that it doesn't feel bland. But, like, it's not... Like, a good example is there's a point where they have to jump out of the car, and there's a part of the chase that happens on foot.
Mm.
And when that happens, you know, you have the guy... He's jumping fences and landing on tables and blah 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 blah, and doing essentially like lo-fi parkour, and at no point is there the inevitable joke about taking a shortcut.
I was about to say, like, because I was so stuck up on the fact that
I wanted the joke.
I would have loved too that he like slams into a fence.
Yeah.
But what I was so stuck on was that it was again yet another Ferris Bueller's Day Off, essentially, like the way he was running through things when he literally jumped through a minivan.
The Mentos commercial show.
But it's super fun. It's still, if you like Edgar Wright, you'll still love this film.
Yeah,
if you don't know who the hell Edgar Wright is, you'll likely still love this film. If you don't even like action films really a lot, there's enough like romance, you know, there's enough of that stuff.
I will say, I don't know who the girl is either. First of all, I like both of the girls in this movie. John Hamm's wife is Eliza something or another. Eliza Gonzalez or Rodriguez, like a very, very common Latina name. But she's fantastic. Yeah. She's really, like, she's really funny and really sexy. And then there's a couple of scenes where she has to, like, drop her act and be a badass. And she's, I think she's more convincingly a badass in this movie than John Hamm is.
Well, I mean, that's actually probably appropriate, but within the context, because there's a great diner scene that I won't get into, but you like,
there's a scene where you get a sense for who these people are when they drop their masks, and when they drop their masks, it's very clear that she's the one wearing the pants, even though he's like giant, muscular, and kind of crazy.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a little natural born killer like feel to it. But I would actually say definitely like better acting in. Everybody's incredible. Even Jamie Foxx is good.
Everybody in this was great. I really liked the two women who had the kind of major roles. I don't know the name of the woman at all who plays the waitress at the diner.
Not the other waitress, or
no, Deborah? The main one,
Deborah. Deborah, then
But I mean, I don't know the.
I forget. I think she's new. I think she's newish. I think.
Yeah, I feel like she looks
vaguely familiar.
I feel like she's been cast in like an X-Men movie or something like that coming up, and you know. But in any event, I know that like I really liked her, but I was kind of distracted by the fact that she's like she's works at this diner. About 80% of the scenes that we see her in, she's in her diner uniform.
Yeah, yeah,
and she like. She looks so much like Machen Amick from the first season of Twin Peaks.
Oh, I don't know that.
Betty Cooper's mom in Riverdale.
Oh, okay.
Like, when she was young, she looked exactly like that.
Yeah.
Including, like, the crimped hair and the... Yeah. It was just, like... It was legitimately kind of distracting. Because I'm like, wow, that's Shelley.
I just found it distracting because she's gorgeous. But she's also excellent.
Yeah.
She is, you know, like, she is the... Like, you could literally transplant her back into with a Steve McQueen film in his early days. And she would have been the perfect...
And that's...
Exactly what she... I mean, it's precisely down to, you know, uniforms and down to everything. Exactly. Well, you know, the jean jackets and...
Of all the Edgar Wright movies, this one feels probably the most timeless, because other than the music, which they didn't use any music, I don't think, that would have been made in the last 10 years.
Well, I think there's some hip-hop-ified modern music, but it's like, I mean, that could have been 15 years ago, it could have been 5 years ago. Like a lot of his films, though.
Yeah, but other than the music, like, there's no pop culture references to speak of.
Yeah.
Like, there's nobody wearing, like... There's nobody wearing a T-shirt that would give you a decade that this came from.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, the full range of the cars are from, you know, 2017 to, like, the police cars are all brand new, modern.
Yeah.
Down to, you know, he drives.
Yeah.
There's five different types of cars.
There's, like, the 1975 Cadillac in this. Which, again, it's the South, and so that actually doesn't pull me out. Like, if that was up here, it would kind of pull you out a little bit.
I mean, everything's like not rusty as
cars last 8 years. Yeah.
like the Explorer we're looking at right now, that's a guy drinking. Exactly. Oh, no, he's not drinking. I don't know. Anyway.
He looks like he's eating popcorn out of a brown paper bag
because it's upstate New York. And anyway, we're now at 37 minutes, so I think it's appropriate to end. Russ,
all right.
Come here, out.
Pardon me?
Give me your outro.
My outro is go see this movie. It's very fun, and we will. I'm sure we'll be back in a week or two because it seems like there's a movie every fucking week now.
Yes, 21st is gonna be a bunch of good things. Anyway,
that's true. All right. Good night.